Arvid here, just wanted to give you a quick call and congratulate you on your year's podcasting. That's a real achievement. You put a lot of content out there. Really enjoyed listening to it. And I think that the main thing is you've made a big contribution to the Anchor community and all the guys on the Discord server. You're obviously running a number of different games, getting involved. I know you're talking a lot on the Discord server. You're doing your Purple Worm podcast as well. So, yeah, I think you've made a big contribution. And just like to thank you for that and keep up the good work.
Come in, my child, out of the cold, and listen how the story's told. From fairy tales to happenstance, the dice rule every random chance. Take off your coat and stay a while, we'll roll in that deep percentile.
Hey everyone, thanks Arvid for those kind words about the year. I appreciate that. It's actually been, this is my longest gap between podcasts, I think, since Christmas. It's been over a week since I last put something out. Don't worry about me. I'm all right. It's all good. I'm a bit busy is all. When lockdown started, I put out an episode saying, oh, you know, you might be hearing a bit less of me, I've got other projects, and then that wasn't really the case. I think after a few days I went back to putting something out at least as often as I had been before. But just in the last few weeks, well, things are taking off a bit with work. I've got lots of projects on, and you can't do it all, can you? I've got Mud Harbour's coming to a bit of a crunch point, so I've got to get that out when I said I would. Just a few. I had an opportunity to refocus some of my research work at work, so that's all quite exciting. Actually, lockdown is, I'm in a very lucky position where I can work from home. My family are very indulgent and supportive, and I've actually been able to really, really refocus and get some important things done. So that's all going on. And then there's the gaming, and I realise in the last week I've run three games. I've GM'd three games in a week, which was they're all really good fun. That's been really good, but I don't know. I suppose the gaming's what it's all about, isn't it? And I just haven't got to the podcasting as easily as I had in the past, and that's okay. And that may be the shape of things to come. I may put things out a little bit less often. It's even possible that this might wind up altogether. But anyway, I'll keep you posted about those things. And I consider these good developments. I mean, the whole Anchor thing, it's been a year in that time. It's just re-energized my passion for the game. It's got me into the whole online gaming thing. Constant listeners will know, back in May of last year, online gaming filled me with trepidation, the idea, and now I've managed to run three sessions in the last week. I've got some long-running games going on, and you know, maybe what I wanted out of podcasting I've achieved there. I mean, there's a few other interesting transitions have happened with lockdown, and my family are very indulgent of a lot of things. They really let me get on with my work. I've enjoyed having flexible time to spend with them. I've loved homeschool with the kids, but I haven't felt really that I can take myself away to listen to podcasts. I haven't had that commute, so I'm just not listening. Well, I've just pretty much stopped listening to podcasts, so I don't have that feeling at the moment that I'm part of that Anchor podcasting community as I was before. So I'm not hearing those other dialogues and discussions which are going on. And again, I think this is just a development. This is just something that's happened. I don't feel particularly bad about it, but it does give me the opportunity to sort of think about what I'm trying to achieve with the podcast. You know, who I'm talking to. So I'm very grateful to people for listening. And it's important that I do this call-in episode because I don't know, I did something right with that one book episode. I thought it was a little bit weird when I started it. You know, do I really even know what I mean by that one book? But I've managed to encourage three new callers. I've got three new callers to play to you in amongst the other responses that I got. So I'm definitely doing something right. But I've been thinking, because I've not got that, you know, that sense that there's a broader discussion going on, which I had when I was listening to the other anchorites. I'm not locking into whatever their preoccupations are, whatever their discussions are. I've kind of gone back to that self-reflective mode where I think, well, what am I really doing with this podcast? As well, on some occasions, I think, well, you know, it's just an extension of social media. It's an opportunity to talk about my games, talk about the things I'm thinking about. There are people listening. People are obviously interested. I mean, I know I was when I started with the anchor thing. That's kind of what I enjoy connecting with, just people talking about the games they were running, having thoughts on games. And then every now and again, I have this thought where I go, look, this is a relatively, relatively sort of privileged long form medium. You know, I've got listeners. They'll listen to me for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, longer sometimes. I could be saying some really important things about the hobby. And then I think, no, that's not the way you want to go. I don't know, so I vacillate, as I often have in the show throughout. I have had issues with the identity of the podcast. What am I trying to do here? Sometimes I laugh at the idea that it's a show. It's just me talking about my games. Other times I think, actually, no. You know, there are some important things I could be talking about and using that privilege that I've got really of having this medium where people are listening and really exploiting that. So I go back and forth, and I'm not really sure where I'll end up with that, but definitely don't be concerned if you don't hear something from me for another week, 2 weeks maybe. I've got lots of things going on. By all means, call in if you've got suggestions, but that's just to fill you in really. And then to get on with the call-ins, because these are all call-ins which were inspired by the one book episode, which I knew was a bit of a weird idea when I started it. But this is, again, this is symptomatic of having sort of been out of touch with the broader anchor conversation. It's just like, well, I'm sure this has been discussed over and over again. And, you know, I don't know. I'm a rules light gamer. I mostly buy games on PDF now anyway. So the idea of the rules as the book is something which I've largely moved away from. But on the other hand, there is a certain satisfaction. I'm getting it mostly at the moment with Old School Essentials, even though I haven't really played it that much yet, where you just hold that and you go, yep. And I've said to people, if you're interested in getting into gaming, you know, this is one to pick up. This is all you need. You know, that one book, that's all you need for a lifetime of gaming, which is attested to by any number of BX communities where that really is all people have been playing since the 80s. Yeah, it really is all you need. And that, you know, there was something of that feeling that I have when I hold that and other books that I was trying to sort of delve into. Maybe I'll carry on, but here I've got a whole bunch of callers in that wanted to delve into that idea, so I'll just get on with it.
Hey, Josh Beckelheimer here. So for the one book, I would go with Swords and Wizardry Complete. I know it's just one of the things that I came across first in my search through the OSR, but there's a reason why it stuck with me. And I mean, it's that single saving throw. The monsters are easy to create on the fly, and there, you know, there is order and reason to the creation of monsters. It all makes sense. Everything, it's just math. It's so simple and easy. And so you can do so much with it. You can create on the fly. You can create classes. You can create your races. You can do everything with that one book. But I do have, I wouldn't say it's a serious problem, but it's a problem that I would definitely have if I had a serious long-term campaign in that game. And the problem that I have with that book is the lack of information on building strongholds and things like that. I think that's really poor. I think it's just, what, one page, maybe two, with like an artwork of some castle with lines that show you how much this thing might cost. I hate it. The problem with that is because if you look at all the classes, they all talk about how they get a stronghold at certain levels. So you would think that would be like the major motivation for all of your characters, is to build a stronghold, but yet there's like nothing really on how to start doing that. I mean, technically you should be able to start doing that at level 2, level 1 even. You're collecting your money, and that's what you're working towards, building that stronghold. But there's no information really, and it really pisses me off about it. But, oh well, other than that.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate the call in. Yes, so I have extolled the virtues of Swords and Wizardry Continual Light before. I've extolled the virtues of White Box Fantastic Medieval Adventure Game. As somebody witty said, it might have been Josh, somebody else on one of the Discord servers, the best version of Swords and Wizardry isn't even Swords and Wizardry. So that's probably a reference to the Fantastic Medieval Adventure Game version of Swords and Wizardry White Box. I've never really got into the core expression of Swords and Wizardry. I mean, I think I encountered it very, very early on. One of the things I encountered was just a terrible layout. Just, you know, I've got two or three different versions of it. I went on drive-through, I went around the place. I couldn't find what the definitive version was meant to be. That confused me. And then the one I've spent most time with, it's just ugly to look at. And that wasn't, at the time, I wasn't so immersed in the OSR, I think, as to want to spend any time with it. So I found my way to Continual Light, White Box. I like them very much. And like you, I really like the one save decision. Second to Ascending Armor Class. Like once you've realised Ascending Armor Class, you never need to go back to Thaco. That's like putting on glasses and then just being nostalgic for poor eyesight. It's like, no, you just don't need to go back. And I think I'm the same with the one save. I mean, you can only really defend the sort of finickiness of the multiple saves through nostalgia or through just enjoying some kind of unnecessary quirkiness, which people have said before. Hobbs called in and said exactly that a little while ago. But I've never played around with that slightly more complex core expression because I found the layout terrible, various other things. So I have supported, I did support the Kickstarter, so I'm looking forward to my multiple book box set of Swords and Wizardry. There was some doubt originally about exactly what the developments were going to be. It seems clear now that they are going for a new layout. There's no doubt that it's Frog God, isn't it? Frog God Games have been inspired by the success of Old School Essentials. They want a piece of that. The Kickstarter wasn't quite so successful, but there was obviously still money to be made. If there has been a learning there, you know, the wonderful layout of Old School Essentials, if there's been a learning there for Swords and Wizardry, then I am really, really looking forward to looking at the rule set, because I think I might be philosophically closer to that rule set with the one save and so on. I don't yet know how they do the thief subsystems and things like that, but if they tidy that up, I think my favourite expression of that is either in White Box Fantastic Medieval Adventure Game or in Lamentations of the Flame Princess. Oh, with all these things, you know, I don't know, I have too high hopes. None of these systems are the perfect system, blah, blah, we've had that conversation before. But I am looking forward to spending some time with what is hopefully at least a better presented on the page version of Swords and Wizardry, so that I can really get to grips with that as a system. Yeah, cheers for your call in, Josh.
G'day, Dave. I was just listening to your One Booking It episode, and I thought I'd just say there's a couple of absolute beauties. Swashbucklers of the Seven Skies is one I have tried. It's a kind of musketeers, pirates type of fantasy genre, and it has absolutely everything you need in one book, and it is a fabo book. And the other one that I will give a shout out for is Pendragon, which you technically really need two books, the core rule book and the campaign book. But once you got those, you have absolutely everything to run a 75-year campaign. It goes on for years and years. I did it and it was a hoot. So those would be my two. So enjoy your show. Richard is my name.
Richard, thank you. Thanks for the kind words. I really appreciate you calling in. on the games. Yeah, so Swashbucklers. This is, if I remember rightly, one of the PDQ system, the Prose Descriptive Qualities System games. I have it. I've mucked about with it a bit. I really liked the PDQ system. This was in my pre-OSR indie phase. I was into all of those games. I think it's got limitations when I think back to it. You know, combining the way damage is done in the PDQ system, where you sort of you damage your attributes, you damage your descriptive qualities, gets a little bit fiddly. It's not one I'd like to try and explain to my kids, that core concept. But I really enjoyed that game. And yes, Swashbucklers, I got hold of that. It is great for a swashbuckling game, but the first thing I did with it was obviously think, oh, well, you know, in the same way that you do fencing styles in this game, you could do martial arts styles. So the first thing I did was hack it into a martial arts game, which I've got those rules, that hacked version, knocking about somewhere. But yeah, a really nifty little game, and not terribly dense, as I recall, in its expression. Not an extensive book. Yes, that's good. Actually, that's a nice blast from the past. At some point, I might maybe say something about the PDQ system. I'm not sure if that gets as much love as it deserves, although I think a lot of its core principles do resurface in other modern games. Yeah, thanks for that. And then Pendragon. I must admit, I've only ever played one session of Pendragon. It was run by Arlen Walker. I did really enjoy it, but I'm not sure if I fully understand, you know, just off the back of that one session, why it's got such devotion. And indeed, it has. I mean, when I was just getting into role playing, I remember my uncle was recommending Pendragon. He was all about Pendragon. He'd been in a long running Pendragon game. I know that's part of the gig, isn't it? Not just that, you know, it suits long term, you know, really, really some investment over time, but also that your campaigns can span these long periods of time and you can follow a legacy down through the family. It does sound like good fun, but I must admit, apart from the prep I did for that one session, which is anyway for one of the derivatives of Pendragon, it was, I can't remember the name of it now, but it was for playing in specifically French medieval romance type sagas, so it wasn't even the core Arthurian setting. But I don't yet know, I haven't yet spent enough time with Pendragon to understand exactly why it has that, you know, why it's got the kind of support and commitment that it has. But yeah, thanks for the suggestions, Rich, and at some point I will spend some time with Pendragon, and then I'm sure I'll have more to say about it. But I really appreciate you calling in. I look forward to hearing more from you.
Hey Dave, it's Che. I'm very confused by your one book thing. So you talk about one book system, and then you go and complain about games that are essentially extended settings with, you know, mechanics for the things in the setting. And you seem to be conflating game rules with game world. And I just got confused by that, to be honest with you. If you mean one game as a system, as a set of rules, you know, fair enough. But I got really confused when he started talking about World of Darkness and all that sort of stuff. So I think there is a distinction there. So I got confused by that. And the second thing is, actually, I just don't get that just because you don't like the Splat Book marketing approach, which obviously is the way that many companies made money and survived, or didn't survive, that's the rule. Anyway, whatever. Right, semi-joking aside, it is great to hear you just talk, actually. You go on about how, you know, you don't have time necessarily to do the call-in episodes, and you like doing them, but they're hard work. And I get that, and I know that is true. That being said, I really miss the episodes where you talk and ramble. So it's just been great in the last one or two to hear you talk and ramble. So please keep talking and rambling, Dave, because I just absolutely love hearing you talk and ramble. And even if I completely disagree with what you're rambling about, or I don't even get what you're rambling about, which is often the case, because I'm just not, you know, necessarily on the same wavelength all the time. I just love the fact that you ramble on, and it's actually entertaining. It's really cool. And we just, I don't know, I think as a community, we just really value what you have to say. So keep doing it. please keep your cast in and don't worry about it. Just ramble, man. Game on. Is any game ever truly contained within a book? I mean, I think you could write down rules and you could describe a world, but isn't the game something that absolutely transcends the pages of a book? I don't know. Seems to me that it's not enough to just have a book.
Cheers, Che. Really appreciate the call in and really appreciate the kind words. Yeah, confused. Maybe I confused you. You certainly confused me in the response. My hackles go up when somebody suggests that I've conflated something. And I have to remind myself that when I'm doing the podcast, I am just rambling. I'm not doing philosophy. And I need to... I need to treat those terms in their sort of everyday sense. Because I kind of think conflation are two completely separate causes. Surely not me. But I was just rambling. On that, one of the reasons why I'm having a bit of an identity crisis with the podcast is because it is a place where I just ramble. And fortunate things are happening for me academically such that... maybe moving towards a convergence of my academic interests with the gaming. I don't want to say too much about that now, but it's just been fun the way Anchor has worked for me. I owe a lot of things to Anchor. As I say, it got me re-energized my passion for the hobby. I've moved from saying, since I gave up that group, I haven't been able to get a game. to saying, well, online gaming, of course, you'd never be stuck for a game, would you? But it's so daunting and it's not optimal. To now just realising that, pretty much anything I want to run, I'll be able to find a bunch of people out there in the world who are interested, subject to a mutually convenient time, in giving it a go. That's a great privilege. And that has come from, encouragement through Anchor. Arlen pulling me into my first online game, Spike Pit encouraging me to run my first online game, and then onwards from there, lots of support from the Anchorites getting involved in the games, and then expanding that out, and now having all sorts of networks and communities that I can pull players from. This has been great. And then along the way, it'd be like, all these thoughts I've had for ages, game design, all these games that I've designed that are sat on my computer, but I can't call myself a writer. Then again, from encouragement of Anchorites now, having succeeded with the Mud Harbour Kickstarter, I can say, yeah, I can write games, I can write for games. I can do that bit as well. And then there's been that little nagging bit for a long time, every now and again I'll express a half-confident philosophical thought about gaming, and then I just think, if only I could do some of this stuff seriously as part of my philosophical work. And I think I might have found an avenue for that. But actually, those kinds of thoughts make me look back over the podcast and go, that's not really what I'm doing here. So I have to remind myself I was just rambling about, if you could only have one book, what would it be? And I have to sort of separate that out from these other thoughts about game theory, which I would like to engage in, but I've never really done on the podcast, and I don't think the podcast is necessarily the best platform for doing that. But watch this space, because I think I have found a way of moving some of my research in that direction. So that'd be quite good fun. I mean, I will respond. So on conflations of rules with settings, I don't think I was, but I'm not gonna strongly disagree with that. But on the marketing one, I mean, yes, of course, lots of companies have made their money from making splat books, but that doesn't make any part of that good. it's good for them if they feed their kids, but lots of companies make their money from flogging tobacco. Doesn't make it good, does it?
hey, this is Memeding. Just listen to your one book in it episode. Seems to me that I want to offer a candidate for one book in it. It's a relatively new book. Tri-Cube Tales. Very rules light. but it seems to have pretty much everything you need to run to any game in any setting. And it seems to make stuff up, which I think is, you know, one of the things you were going for. So, yeah, just want to offer that. All right, thank you very much. Really appreciate your podcast.
Mamadine, thanks so much. I really appreciate the call-in. I'm really glad this one book idea inspired people. So Try Cube Tales, thank you. One of the things that held up this episode was I was going to read it first and then respond to you. I haven't had time. However, look, this is on DriveThruRPG, Try Cube Tales. It's on for $1. And it is a specifically formatted for mobile phone PDF. Look, you guys, for $1, you check it out. Check it out. Have a look at it. Call in. Let me know what you think of it. I certainly will get to that. Mamadine, thank you. And then I will say something about it on the show. But I really appreciate the call in. I love to have new callers. And yeah, I'd encourage other people out there listening. If you haven't called in before, please do introduce yourself. Tell me a little bit about, you know, what you're playing. And give me some recommendations like this one, because I had not heard of Tricube Tales at all. That was completely not on my radar. And I'm looking forward to. So it's, I think it's presenting itself as one of these universal systems. You can do any genre. I've got a lot of time for that project. Got another. Well, it's not a call-in, but I've got another contact about universal systems to play you in a minute. So thanks very much. Sorry I couldn't say more about Tricube Tales. I haven't had a chance to read the document. I haven't opened it. Don't even know how long it is. But there you go. It's $1 on Drive-Thru. So, listeners, have a look at it. Give me a call in. Let me know what you think. And thanks again for the call in.
Hey, up, Dave. Shandy Andy here. I was just listening to your latest podcast, the one where you're talking about the one book, and just listening to your bit about Fifth Ed, which I found quite interesting. So, not finish the rest of the podcast, but if I don't get send you a message now, I'll probably never get around to it. So anyway, as you know, I'm not Fifth Ed's biggest fan, but I agree, you make some excellent points there. I think the marketing has been very good on Fifth Ed. It doesn't overwhelm you with the options, so fully behind you on that. And the one thing I will say about the one book, I know what you're saying about the three core books. You can run Fifth Ed just using the player's handbook, and I've done so. I ran quite a few sessions, just me and my wife, using that. I'm not claiming that it's pure rules as written Fifth Ed, because obviously I'm missing the other two books, but you certainly don't need the monster manual. You can quite easily make up your own monsters anyway, and I don't think you need the DMG if you've got some experience running other versions of D&D.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate the call. Yeah, and that is an important thing, I think, an important caveat to what you say. So, of course, you can run it from the player's handbook, but especially if you've already run D&D. Yeah, I'm not sure it would be so easy for a new DM to do that, but I think it'd be interesting if you were only constructing D&D from the player's handbook, Fifth Ed anyway, you'd maybe make some interesting decisions. I mean, I can't remember if there are two or three sample monsters in there. Maybe it includes stats for the kinds of monsters you might summon, as I recall. I'm not looking at it now, but whether there are two or three sample monsters in the back. But I think they're tending to be the simpler monsters, you know, beasts and stuff. And so they have smaller stat blocks. They don't have as many funky powers. And that might be a good thing, actually. If you were just learning D&D from the player's handbook, you wouldn't bung a whole bunch of funky powers on your monsters, which would probably actually make them easier to run and would make the whole experience a bit more of an old school experience, actually. So there might be some things which might be quite liberating, actually. So just put the DMG and the monster manual to one side and just try and run from the player's handbook. I mean, one of the things, I've been extolling the virtues of Numenera, in that it just hands all the crunch over to the players and GM doesn't have to worry about it. Well, actually, if your players have read their player's handbook, you can, of course, do that with Fifth Ed. If you keep your monsters nice and simple, and you trust your players to run their own, worry about their own crunch, keep track of their own bonus actions and so on and their spells, then actually, as a DM, you haven't got too much to worry about. So, yeah, good suggestion. I mean, I've only got good thoughts about 5th edition. You know, the creakiness of my copies of the books aside, the pages are inclined to fall out. I played 5th edition for a very long time, really, before I shifted into a more OSR mindset. It's not the game I'm currently running because, as I say, at higher levels, it does get a little bit fiddly for me. You've got monsters all over the table, summoned zombies, summoned wolves and so on. I don't know, I just found that a bit tedious. But, yeah, but also I don't feel the need to be on board with the whole current Anchorite rediscovery of 5th edition. You know, it was there. It was there before the Anchorites decided you could OSR it. thanks for the call, Andy. I really appreciate hearing from you. And then I got an email from Bob. Thanks for this email, Bob. No point having a podcast email account if you're not going to respond to the emails. So what I have done, I'm very glad to receive your email. I've read it out. So what you're going to hear now is Bob's correspondence to me, and then I'll respond to it afterwards. So thanks very much for this contact, Bob. It's great to hear from you. There is an email there in the show notes. If you don't want to leave a message on Anchor, please do send me an email. The other thing is, if you want to, you can always record using some other device or platform and then attach that to an email. Bung that to me, I can upload that into the show as well. Cheers very much, Bob. In the mid-80s, our group played mostly GURPS 2nd edition. We'd played D&D, AD&D, The Fantasy Trip, Gamma World, Hero System, Champions, Traveller, Ice's Merp and others. There was only the GURPS basic set in our possession. We didn't have any setting or genre books, many of which were 3rd edition books. Neither did we know anything about the monthly or quarterly publications which had optional genre treatments. Using just the basic set, we played high and low fantasy, Wild West, Pirates, World War II, Scarlet Pimpernel, Space Games, Post-Apocalyptic, and I'm sure there were more. In those days, there was not a lot of money to spare, and we just made up what we needed, built upon the framework which GURPS provided. For our group, the GURPS basic set was the one-book system, just add fantasy, sci-fi, fiction, books, movies, and player imagination. Thanks very much, Bob. Appreciate this. Yeah, so in the very early 90s, I came across GURPS. It must have been... maybe it was advertised in the back of another game. I didn't really read the magazines. Occasionally, I went into the friendly local game shop. That was quite a trek for me to go there. It wasn't so local. Maybe I saw it on the shelf there. But certainly, I didn't know much about the game apart from that wonderful title, you know. There were other generic systems out there, but none that had built it into the name, you know, the generic universal role-playing system. And I fell in love with the idea. It was 3rd edition at that time. I got hold of 3rd edition and I carried that book around in my bag at school for years, literally years, trying to convince groups to play it. We were coming out of Fight Fantasy. We'd gone into Palladium. I went out of Fight Fantasy straight into TMNT and other strangeness, and then we went into Rifts. So I was having to try and combat Rifts. I was having to try and fight against bits of World of Darkness. Shadowrun was big with my mates. As I say, the group I was with, not particularly D&D for whatever reason. I've talked about that before on the show, but I was like, well, you don't understand, you know, this is the one book we'll ever need. We just learn these rules, we can play any game. And I loved it, but I couldn't get them into it. And at the time, I don't know, I definitely struggle running games with fiddlier rules. I do like to immerse myself in the rules of a game. I do like to understand them, but then I do struggle if the rules are a bit fiddlier with running them. And I think GURPS 3rd edition, definitely at that time, my early teens, stretched me a bit. So whilst I was really insistent with my friends that we should play this game, I suppose I never pushed it as hard as I could, because I also didn't have the confidence necessarily that I could run it. But I'm aware, obviously, Che is a big advocate of GURPS as the one game to rule them all. Certainly I had that plan for GURPS, and it's good to hear that in your case that came through for you. I mean, I stuck with it. I got 4th edition, played in some GURPS games. I've said this before, I really enjoyed playing in a 4th edition game. We were doing a Roman, sort of a historical Roman game. It had some supernatural elements in it, but we were basically a squad of hardened Roman soldiers. It was brilliant. I mean, really crunchy combat that I really enjoyed playing. I enjoyed knowing all the various things that I could do and attempt. But it always, even as a player at that time, I looked across at the GM and thought I wouldn't really want to be in his chair having to run all this. But of course, you use as little or as much as you want, as I've heard from other GMs. So if you don't want all of those fiddly complexities, you just don't allow them, you don't include them in the game. So I've heard lots of good things about GURPS. As I say, it never quite worked for me. And I think that time for me is past now, because if I want a universal system, I've got loads that will do it in fewer pages. But I understand the value of that system that you commit to, inside out. Once you know the rules inside out, it becomes that much more flexible, doesn't it? Anyway, Bob, I appreciate getting the contact, and I'd look forward to hearing more from you. Thanks for that.
Hey, Dave, Jason here. So, one booking it. I would not pick 5th edition, but I would consider 1st edition AD&D. I do think you take those core three books, the Player's Handbook, Monster Manual, and Dungeon Master's Guide, and you could just have those in play, and many people did. And so I think the evidence that many people, that's all they had, shows that does work as one book. You mentioned OSC. Obviously, they do a one book with a core, and that's based on BX, the Bovey Cook Basic Expert. And I would take the Basic Expert over OSC or Gavin's BX. Nothing against Gavin's work, but because the original BX is smaller and slimmer, and I like the artwork better. So I would take the original Bovey Cook and consider that a one book option. To close out the straight D&D products, I would not. I know a lot of people may call in and say the Rules Cyclopedia, and this is from the Basic Expert Companion Master Immortal set, the Beckme set, that was combined into one book. I would rule out the Rules Cyclopedia because it loses a lot of flavor from those five box sets, and I just don't like it because I like the flavor of those box sets better, which is why I take BX instead. Now, from the same era of the early days, in fact, the second role-playing game ever made, Tunnels and Trolls, stands as a one-book game. No question about it that it works fine as a one-book game. You may not like it, but there's no question Tunnels and Trolls meets that one-book criteria almost all around. And the Black Hack, you'll go into that, but I agree the Black Hack fits as well. You mentioned Star Wars, and yes, all the Star Wars games have tons of splat books. I do think the original West End game Star Wars, you can play with just the core book. I really think probably the second edition. But you can play Star Wars with just that core book, and that's it, and be fine. So I really think that would work. Also, what was I going to mention? I was just thinking, and I lost it. Oh, I know. Two other ones, fantasy ones, and then I'll cut out for tonight. Barbarians of Lemuria stands fine in the one book. I think Barbarians of Lemuria is an excellent one-book game, and I know you like it, so you'll probably agree with that. The PDQ version, Jaws' Silver Six Serpents, probably would. I've never played it. I assume it's going to work fine, so it probably counts. And then the other fantasy game, and this might be a little contentious, the other fantasy game I would say is Palladium Fantasy role-playing game. I think that Palladium Fantasy, especially first edition, is a standalone game. You really don't need anything else. I know they sold a bunch of other stuff, but you really don't need it. Same thing with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You really didn't need the splat books. Of course you buy them, but you don't need them. You can play Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with just that basic book. I'd have to look at Ninja Spies or Ninjas and Super Spies, but I bet you could probably play that with just the base book as well. So I guess what we're seeing is there are tons of books and games that work as just one book. And I'll tell you something that I don't think works, even though it should, is Savage Worlds, because it just wants you to buy settings. So I gave you a ton of great candidates of one-book games, and I'll readily defend any of the ones I gave you, but I'll also give you one negative, and that's going to be Savage Worlds. And I like Savage Worlds, actually. But I don't think you just... Now, I haven't looked at the new book. I kickstarted it, but I haven't opened any of those boxes, so I don't know what the event or the new edition's like. But the old, you know, the one that was $10, that one, it's a great game. It's a great reference guide. And yeah, if you know what you're doing, you can make a game out of it. But really, Savage Worlds cries out for a setting book to go with it. And so I would say it does not meet your criteria. It kind of does, but you know what I mean? In spirit, I don't think it does. So I'll leave the calls in here. And then when other people call in, I'll call in and, you know, heckle. I mean, give comments on their choices. So talk to you later.
There we go. An epic Jason call in. Really pleased to get these calls, Jason. There's definitely a discussion here around the one book. Even if I think I may have to clarify what I mean. Well, I mean, that was the idea. We were going to arrive at these principles for one book in it. You know, playable from just one book. Was that all I meant? I don't know. Definitely, Barbarians and Lemuria is a contender for me. Not without its flaws, but that's a great little system. I think that's, yeah, you mentioned Jaws of the Six Serpents, which is also a favourite of mine. I think it's between the two of them, actually, for me so far, that I've found for the best sword and sorcery game, but also both the PDQ system, well, it's been mentioned. Swashbucklers was also mentioned. Infinitely hackable game. You could do any genre with that, even from any basic expression of the rules. And similarly, Barbarians of Lemuria has been hacked to all kinds of genres. And again, a nice light game, which without too much thought, you can repurpose for other... You know, that wasn't necessarily a criterion. I didn't necessarily say that your one book had to be a game that you could play any genre with. You know, I wasn't looking for one universal system, but it's interesting that some of the contenders that have come up have been universal systems. I mean, but I can't remember the name of it. Pete Jones will call in. I do own it, but I've never looked at it. But there was a universal version of the core Barbarians of Lemuria rules produced, which I haven't looked at, but it is a neat little system. Yeah, so lots to think about there. I don't know. I don't know why I sort of vacillated between you could play it from the core. I think Che is picking up on something, actually, that I just, you know, it really puts my back up, the whole splat for money culture. And again, you know, no one needs to buy them. You don't need them just because they're there. But, yeah, I suppose I just am opposed to that marketing model. There we are. Because you mentioned Palladium, yeah, I've got to play this other call I got from Jason. It's on a slightly different topic, but this one's turned into a long episode, and you know, I think less people are listening to this on the commute at the moment, so maybe you can bear to stick with an epic long episode, maybe you can't, but I wanted to put it in here. So there's another one from Jason. Cheers, Jason.
Hey Dave, Jason here. Just listened to your latest Ninja Call-In episode. Great episode. For now, I'll just refer to one thing. Lonely Adventurer talks about the Palladium games, and I will offer a minor defense. Obviously, they're playable to some degree because we all played them as kids, right? And it's by far it's far from the worst system out there. I think we can all easily think of systems that are worse than Palladium. And more unplayable than Palladium is. That's not saying it's a great system. It's not saying that, you know, I have a fondness for those settings, and I would definitely put them in a different system these days. But to say it's the worst system out there, I think, is just a little bit over the top. So, anyhow, I'll leave it there. Talk to you later. Bye.
So there you go. Bit of a longer episode than usual, but look, if you didn't want to listen to a triple strength episode, you'd have turned off long before now. Thanks very much for all my call-ins, particularly to my new callers. I love getting these call-ins, and I do always get to them in the end. But special thanks today to Arfed, to Josh, to new caller Richard, to Che, new caller Mamading, Shandy Andy, Bob, thanks for the email, and Jason. Cheers again, keep well everyone. And I'll talk to you soon.
Of course, you can't talk about multicolor ninja suits and not mention Five Elements Ninja, a movie Dave doesn't like, but is obviously accurate because it shows that Chinese kung fu is superior to Japanese karate.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to contact Dave, please leave a message on Anchor, email dpercentile@gmail.com, or find him on Twitter at d_percentile.